Hey there, if you are ready to build your service-based business from scratch and ditch your 9-to-5, then I want you to head on over to shedidithowaypodcast.com/leap and download my free Ultimate Leap Checklist and Starter Kit. Again, you can head to shedidithowaypodcast.com/leap to download my Ultimate Leap Checklist and Starter Kit to get started on building your service-based business and ditching your 9-to-5. Hello and welcome to She Did It Her Way, a podcast dedicated to helping you launch a business that allows you the freedom to create from anywhere, design your own schedule in a way that supports you, and pursue what it is that lights you up. I'm Amanda Bolin, your host, and it is time to do it your way.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to another episode of She Did It Her Way podcast. Today, I have the great pleasure of hanging out with Kate Aull, who is the founder of Simple Pin Media. Kate, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, well, I'm super excited to chat, obviously, because I've just heard so many great things about you from Natalie Bacon, and I've been checking out your website, and you're just doing such amazing big things as a business owner, but also just through Pinterest. So I'm really looking forward to you sharing some tips and tricks about that, because I still feel like it's an untapped resource, and would love to talk about your journey and get some insight on Pinterest and how we can utilize it. But why don't you tell us in your own words, who Kate is, and then a little bit more about your business, and then we'll kind of back up and go through how did you even start it and how did it come about?
Perfect. Sounds good. So I am a wife and a mama to 3 kiddos. My kids are 9, 11, and 13. So I'm just entering into the tween stage. My oldest are 2 girls, and they are transitioning into teens very fast. And so
you mean they're not like transitioning into 30 yet?
I know.
Right? What is that movie about 13 going on?
Oh, totally. Some days it feels like it. Like they'll look at me with this kind of look on their face of, you're kind of an idiot. And I'm kind of like, what? Where'd this come from?
Where are you learning this?
I know. They're so sweet. So I actually work full-time on my business. My husband is also home full-time. He's a part-time pastor at a church that's just south of here. So we're full-time family. My kids really don't know what it's like to have their parents go to work. So I do that, and I work out of a garden shed, actually, in my backyard. I call it my she shed, and it's my office. It's really cozy, and I can leave all my stuff out here and be able to really have a hard stop of work and life. So I run a Pinterest management company. So what we do is we manage clients' Pinterest pages so they can really focus back on other areas of their business, because we see Pinterest as such a powerful tool in bringing more traffic to people's websites and that generating conversions for email or selling products or affiliates or even ad revenue. And so we really want to take this off their plate in a very highly curated, high touch way. It's not a VA service. It's the Nordstrom of Pinterest management.
Ooh, and who doesn't love Nordstrom? Their customer service is bomb.
Yeah, they're such a great example for me. Like I watch what they do. I pay attention to how our customer journey is. We're always refining it. We have a lot of people on my team. I actually have a team of almost 40, which is really crazy. But I love team building, and I love helping clients achieve the success that they need with Pinterest without having to think about it, really, truly taking it off their plate.
Very, very cool. Very exciting. Now, I know that you were never in corporate, but take us back to the moment that you put together Simple Pin Media.
Yeah.
Take us back to like, what were you doing? What was around? Who was around? Take us to that moment.
So I was actually working with a friend on her blog. It was a frugal and deal blog. And started that in 2010. And I loved learning about blogging and Facebook and doing her social media management. And that kind of migrated a little bit into Pinterest management as well. Well, in 2012, my husband had lost his job. And that was really, you know, still in the recession, still going down. And working for her part-time was okay, matched with unemployment. But in August of 2013, we lost unemployment. And so we basically had $1,000 a month and a family of 5. And so we were living on food stamps, essentially. And was sitting at a friend's kitchen table who I was working for, and she looked at me and she said, I think you should manage people's Pinterest pages, because at that moment, Facebook had changed their algorithm for business pages. It was the first big switch. And basically, these businesses who had been riding high on this free traffic from Pinterest were panicking because it was gone. And Pinterest had not yet changed up their algorithm. It was still a chronological feed.
And you mean free traffic from Facebook or Pinterest?
Facebook, sorry.
Okay. Yeah. No. Yeah, no worries. Yeah. I was like, wait, I think it's Facebook, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Great. Facebook for sure. So everybody, it was like everybody saw your posts. Everybody saw everything. So it was fun, right? Because you were driving amazing amounts of traffic from Facebook.
This is amazing. It's free.
Yeah. So then seeing this big shift and knowing this frugal deal blogging space, she said, why don't you try managing people's Pinterest pages? And I looked at her and I thought, that is the dumbest idea. Like nobody's going to go for it. People are going to think that's crazy. But she said, what is your other option? Like you have nothing. And I thought, well, she's right. Like we might as well try it. And so I bought a domain. I bought Simple Pin Media because I did want it to be simple. I wanted everything to be super clear cut, easy to understand. And I also really understood at that time the mind of a blogger specifically, because I was a blogger. I was working with bloggers. And I knew that their to-do list was so long. Like it never changed. I was added to every single day. And so I really had this idea, like, what if I took that off your plate and you didn't have to think about this one piece of social media that would drive traffic to your website? And so we asked two beta clients, will you come in and come on with me and at a very, very low discounted price and just give me feedback? And in all honesty, I set out with the intention to fail. I thought, let's just go into it. If it's totally disastrous, we'll just pretend it never existed. And it was such the worst mindset, right? To start a business like this is kind of bomb.
So to even pause on that, I think, you know, I'm sure all of us have definitely experienced that. And it's kind of a little bit of the normalcy, because if we put ourselves in the position of like, it's going to bomb, it kind of takes the pressure off, or at least from my experience, it takes the pressure off so that we're like, okay, whatever the outcome is the outcome. But then like I bet you're going to, through your experience, it's like, your mindset totally changes after that.
Yeah.
And then it's more about play to win and I'm going to make this happen versus, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. And you know, what's actually really interesting about, so it's been 5 years actually until I bought the domain the 1st of December, actually. So I had the idea in August.
Congrats.
I did a bunch of research and then I finally, you know, bought the domain in December. But one of the things that idea of failing, I don't think I really broke myself of that until probably like year 2 or 3. I kept holding myself back like, oh, we'll stop when we get to this many clients. So, you know, like no more than 50 clients. Like I'm not going through that ceiling. That's crazy. And then we went past it and it was like, okay, well maybe we'll go to 75, but like, that's it, you guys, like we cannot go bigger. And now we have 130 clients.
Love it.
And it's been such an amazing, like, you know, when you run your own business, there's so many things that you bump up against in your personality and your mindset and all of that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what this has been about is, you know, I really, really do love that element of serving like business owners so that they can be successful. And at the same time, also having to serve my own business. So it's kind of like you have these 2 feet and you're kind of dancing back and forth between the two in each week. Like, okay, I have to serve my team. Now I serve the client. Now I serve, you know, the marketing side of things. So there's a lot of spinning parts, but it's awesome. And it's afforded me a lot of ways to give and serve my team. And it's just been such an incredible journey.
Yeah. Well, I mean, congratulations just with everything that you've accomplished and through some of the things that you had just noted, I would love to dive in. You mentioned between like year 2 and year 3 is when a mindset shift happened. Just with like the failure mindset, can you expand a little bit more on that and what it was like for you?
Yeah, I think it was... I'm naturally like risk averse, right? I look at things and I measure them and say like, okay, well, I might win here or might not win here. Very calculated, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, stopping at these certain benchmarks, you know, whether it was 25 clients or 50 clients. And I also had a business coach. I hired a business coach very, very early on because I knew the power of being led and remaining teachable. Mm-hmm. And he would say to me like, we want to get to this point. And I think what helped in those early days when my mindset hadn't shifted yet, was that somebody else was speaking success over me. Like, we'll get to this point. Like, we'll get to this point. And even though I didn't believe it, somebody else did. Mm. So then I think when we did get to that 75 mark, it was like all of a sudden the lights went on. It was like, okay, game on. Like, let's do this. Let's really make this successful and let's make this amazing. And I think before it was still the idea that like, man, what if I fail? And you know, that is my greatest fear, is failure. And my husband always tells me like, success is often built on a mountain of failure. Like, you learn from your failure, you learn from these things. And it's so true, because every single point where we have a failure, we have an opportunity to learn. And so now, even amongst our team, we have the phrase fail forward. We always take something that we failed at and we fail forward into success. Like, how do we learn from it? What are the things that we take away? We don't get down on ourselves. We don't apologize profusely, but we take it apart and go, how can we do better? And I think all of those things piecing together really made that impact between year two and year three to say, okay, this is still growing successfully. I can trust it. And even if it does fail, it's not the end of the world, right? Like, it's not, I'm not going to be, we've been down at the bottom, right? We know how to live lean. We know how to be poor. So it's not like we already haven't hit the worst. And, but even more than that, I think it was also the realization that I had to rally, because now I had a team and now I had people who depended on me to be their cheerleader and to be the person that really steered the ship in a way that made them feel successful. So if I was always feeling like fearing the failure piece, what was that going to do to them? And so I think that was all of it combined to go, okay, game on, we can do this. And it was literally like one morning, wake up. Okay, here we go.
This is it. This is the new, like, this is the embodiment of success. And it's just, I love all the beautiful facets that you had to it. And sometimes, and I don't know if this was how it felt for you, is so early on, you're doing so much and you're testing so much to see what works and what doesn't work, that it's almost a necessary messy point to go through to help gain clarity on the other end and to experience it and say, oh my gosh, I've done all of this. And it was successful in the fact that I've done it. And now, like, how can I streamline it? How can I make it even better? And then continue to move forward.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And then I even think we deal with that even now, you know, like coming back from, I just got back from vacation, which we were talking about that. And I had a recap with my executive team and it was really messy for them. And it was hard. It was a hard week. But we all ask the question, okay, what did we learn? What are the things that we can take away from this? And I had to tell them, and I feel like I've told them before, but I've reiterated again, like, I'm not going to be mad. Like, I'm never going to be upset with the decisions that you make. I'm going to be proud of you that you thought through this and you made a decision that was best for the company. And I know that they are loyal to the company just like I am. And so it's not just me, Kate, and I'm very specific about my pronouns. I don't say, you know, Simple Pin is an I, it's a we. Like, we do this together. And I said 99 times out of 100, I'm going to be like, great job. You made a decision. And if we need to clean up stuff later, we can. And there were some things that, you know, some people on my team said, I felt like I had a mop last week. I felt like I just was mopping things up, which doesn't feel good. But I said, okay, well, what do we got to change? And we do have to change some things. We have to be honest about, you know, our customer journey. And that's a tough thing to revisit because you want to get it in place. And, you know, we're very much like check things off our list, right? Like we've gotten this checked, we're done. We don't want to revisit it, but this constantly challenges us to go back and say, okay, how do we serve this particular type of client that we're seeing come in the door more when we haven't done it before and be successful at it? And sometimes that's frustrating because you're like, oh my gosh, haven't we done this? But yeah, it's always refining.
We're going back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know one thing too, is that I love how you said family first, and for you, your work week is 30 hours. So can you talk to us a little bit about how you have prioritized your workload and maybe systematized it to get it to a place where you feel confident and the business runs on 30 hours a week?
Yeah. So I would say number one would be I am a natural team builder. I love having a team. Hiring is never something I've ever been afraid of. Mm-hmm. And it's always been something that I've sought out pretty quickly too. So in running the business in the beginning, you know, it went from the two clients and then it was all referral based. It pretty much has been the entire time. So two clients turned into four, turned into eight. And in July of 2014, that first year, my daughter was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. Mm. And we were in the hospital and I was trying to pin and I was trying to learn this new way of life and grieving, and she was eight and it was completely overwhelming. And in this moment, I had this realization like, wow, I need somebody to be me. Like, I need a number two. And I don't. So in case of another emergency, which hopefully there wasn't going to be, I need somebody else to step in for me. And thankfully, my clients were so gracious at that time to give me the time I needed. But because we were still living very lean financially, I didn't really have an option to stop working. So I hired a good friend of mine and I said, I don't know what I'm doing, but here's kind of the parameters of how I want this to look. Can we just work on this together? And she's like, sure. And she's still actually with me to this day. So she's been with me 4 years. Yeah, it's incredible. So then what I did was I realized that with my kids entering into school, so at that time my kids were 8, 6, and 4, and I knew I had to kind of mirror my schedule around their, you know, day too as well, because I listened to a podcast or I read a blog article a long time ago, and they talked about this concept of hard stops. And they said, if we don't put in hard stops in our day, we're always leaving things open-ended. And that takes a lot of your mental capacity, and you're always checking things and you're always looking at your phone or whatever it is. So you're never really fully present in those moments where you need to be. I thought, I want to live this philosophy of hard stops. And so what are the hard stops in my day and where do I put those in and put specific boundaries around that? So I decided that between the hours of 2:30 and 8:30 were like game off, like no screen for me, no computer, no Facebook, no nothing. I wouldn't answer emails. I would kind of be like, quote unquote, unreachable, but like my team can message me or Voxer me if they really have an emergency, but it never usually comes up. So then I decided 9 to 2, Monday through Friday, would be perfect hours for me. And I would hard stop at 2:30 and be done. And then if I really needed to get to something, I would save it for Sunday afternoon. And Sunday afternoon kind of became my like mental planning for the week. So I would take like 2 to 3 hours. I would look at what was up for the week. I would close my calendar, do these certain things. And I think those habits starting really, really early on set me up just to have the schedule that just feels very normal to me. You know, I didn't want to work until 5 just because my kids got home. And there's a lot of things when your kids come home that they're ready. Some are ready to talk and some are not. But if there's something that's happened.
What did you learn at school today? Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Sure?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like deadpan, right?
How was
like,
school today? Good.
Yeah, can I play my Switch? Well, yeah. Sure. Okay, talk to you later.
Bye.
So that those two combinations of knowing that I was okay building a team is huge. And I'm also not the type of person that feels like I need to do everything. And I look around and go, there's somebody smarter than me. And how do I tap into that to help them feel successful and to help Simplepin feel successful? Because I'm not good at that. But this person, they really are. So all of those, I would say, were the factors that contributed to limiting it to 30 hours. And then even being okay with sometimes scheduling a doctor's appointment for my kids during the day. I don't like to do that, but I will. So some weeks it's 20, 25 hours. So yeah.
I love the hard stop or hard start piece, right? Because it's so easy to fall into the experience of just checking the phone or checking social media. Whether you're doing anything productive, it's still the act and energy to check an email or check social media and see what's going on. I know I can certainly do better at that for sure. So,
And I'll say too to that, like one of the experiences that actually led me to that was that, I mean, and I'm sure you've been on the receiving end of this too, is that people can be mean. And people can choose like some days to send an email or do a Facebook post or whatever that's not kind. And if I checked my email one time before my kids went to school, and this woman just like tore me to shreds and it like devastated me and it ruined that morning with my kids. Mm-hmm. And so I think that taught me a lesson, like I don't check my email before my kids leave for school because I just don't know what's going to be in there. I don't want it to devastate me.
It's so, I mean, it is, oh my God. Yes, absolutely. I did a solo cast on managing emotions with social media because that was, I mean, I was on my honeymoon this past March and just even going on social media and then you start seeing things and you're like, oh my gosh. And then the dialogue starts. It's like, okay, let's just not even open this thing up the rest of the time on vacation. Like,
you're totally right.
You just don't know. And it's, just being very mindful and especially in the morning, like maybe instilling some sort of habit or routine to where you don't check email or you don't check social media before you get all the important stuff done that you need to get done. So no, that's amazing. What would be, you know, you've been in business for 5 years now, and what are three actionable items you would recommend to new business owners when they're just starting out?
Oh man, sometimes it's hard to go back to those early days and remember kind of, okay, what worked, what survived. I would say number one would be knowing the value of your time. A lot of people, especially if they're service providers like I am, they will charge really, really low amounts for their services because they feel like, well, if I go super low, then I'm going to, like, everybody's going to choose me because, you know, I'm the lowest price. I would say really be strategic about how much do you want to make per hour? And obviously you're not going to make, you know, in year one, what you would make in year five. So be realistic about that. Like, what's your hourly rate? What are your expenses? Like, how much are you going to pay in taxes? How much are you going to pay in these other things? And price appropriately. That would be probably the biggest thing too. Even if you're doing online courses or whatever it is, be real clear about that and then use that method to kind of choose to increase your prices over the years incrementally. And don't be afraid of increasing your prices too. Knowing your worth, I think, is really, really important. So I would say that would be a big one that I remember from the early days. And then hiring a business coach if you can, or joining a mastermind that's free. Just having somebody else speak into your business and speak into your personality in business, I think, is really important. I know there's certain things that I have a, you know, personal mastermind that I'm a part of in addition to a coach, but I love that they know these little things about me over the years, these little traps that I get caught into and kind of squirrely where they're like,
wait, what are you doing?
Yeah. They're like, squirrel, like, don't do that. And if you don't have that, I find that you are more like susceptible to chasing other people's success. And I was a victim to that as well, as I would see all these things online and I was really hustling and I was trying to get things and I was comparing like my start to someone else's middle, or I would look at somebody else who was doing maybe Pinterest marketing and they were selling courses, but they weren't doing management like I was. And I would be really jealous. I was like, oh my gosh, they're selling all these courses and everybody sees them and I'm here. Right. And somebody was really great and they came along to me and they said, your business is not their business. Like, they're doing something totally different. They're monetizing in a different way and they're really good at marketing. And I was like, yes, that's right. Like, that's not my first skill. My first skill is building a team and systematizing and serving clients. And the marketing piece is, you know, it's secondary for us here. You know, it's something that we definitely want to do, but I did sell a course before, but I pulled back on that because it's not what I'm supposed to be focused on. And I think that is probably another big piece of advice that I would give people who are just starting out. Like, keep your head down, like focus on the things that are in front of you. And if you need to unfollow people on social media mm-hmm. or unsubscribe from their emails because they're triggers for you, do it. Like, I mean, I am the first person to say that, like, that comparison trap can just send me into a tailspin. So I had to unsubscribe and not like take people off Instagram just because it was this trigger for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love, just like bringing up the part about, you know, not chasing other people's success. Cause once you, and especially in the beginning, I think, you know, a lot of people tuning in, there was multiple phases of the lead up phases, what I like to call before you actually quit your job. And it goes from like multi-passionate to, okay, now I'm lacking the, how do I even take the first step to, okay, I have the side hustle, but now how do I scale it so that I can take the leap? And it's like in the beginning, you might find yourself because you're doing a ton of research and you're looking at, okay, what do I actually want to start? But then once you start it, it's finding out, finding someone who is successful at it and finding the model, but then also protecting, like you said, where not, you know, unsubscribing from emails if they're a trigger, or if you find yourself constantly like, oh, that person's doing that, I think I need to do that. But then taking a step back and saying, do I really need to do that? Or am I just being triggered because I think I should do that?
Yeah. And one of the things I realized also for me was that there was nobody else doing what I was doing. And there was nobody else that was serving, growing an agency and serving these clients in this particular way just for Pinterest. There's people who do social media management, or there's people who will sell digital courses, but there was nobody honing in on this growth of an agency. Mm-hmm. And that also felt a little bit, well, I actually didn't realize, I didn't put two and two together to realize like, oh, I'm doing something so different. I don't really have anybody else to look to. Like, I would hear people who did management and I would say, oh my gosh, can I talk to you? Like, what are your struggles? What are the things you're dealing with? And they were like, well, I only have like two clients and I had like 25. And so I felt like we couldn't necessarily relate because now I was growing a team. Mm-hmm. And that has been probably, that has been actually probably one of the most difficult things, because usually we look ahead to somebody else and we go, okay, I want to aim for where they are, like not necessarily their business, but I see their growth and I want to emulate that, or I want to take away lessons from that. The difficulty was that I just didn't have anybody. And then everybody I talked to, they had a cap, or they wanted to do it all themselves, or they couldn't understand the idea of hiring. Hiring is a big hurdle for people. Mm. They just do not want to give up control. And so I come along and I'm like, let's hire everybody. And they're like, I don't know what to do with you. So having a coach has been probably one of the biggest sanity savers for me, to be able to go to somebody and say, I just need you to guide me. Like, tell me what to do next, because I'm in year five and that's a big shift in your business. And now I have this team, like, where are we going? How do we grow? Like, it's, that's a lot. So having, you know, like I said, that masterminder, that coach is really essential to keeping you moving forward, or you're just going to get lost in yourself. Like, it's easy for us to get trapped in our own head.
Oh, amen to that.
Yeah.
That's what you definitely need to have. Yeah. Need to get out of that. The brain is such a, I know Tony Robbins really preaches this about how the brain is millions of years old and we all have same thoughts. Like, it's not our thought to think like, oh, what if this fails? It's the brain's thought. And
yeah,
being able to get outside of yourself and your brain and to understand that, you know, we're just the ones observing the experience and it's not necessarily happening to us, but it's happening for us. So, yeah. Talk to us about, I love celebrating failures, and I would love if there's one in your repertoire that really just, you know, hit you at the time and it was a failure that, you know, really stands out as a big one, but also a one that you walked away and learned a ton from and grew from.
Oh man, there's a lot, right?
I know. That's what everyone says. They're like, there's so many.
Yes.
But there truly are. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Like your husband said, success is built on a mountain of failures.
Yeah, totally. I think the thing that I would say the failure that we keep learning from is, I would say, like, the unique needs of each client. And I don't know. Well, I'll go back and say this. So that email that I was talking about where somebody was kind of like tearing me apart. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there was something that we did do wrong in that. And it was something very, very minor. It wasn't really huge, but the point of it being is that it wasn't, she felt not taken care of mm-hmm. and not really her brand, not, I guess, yeah, caretaking would be kind of the best word. So in that email, there was, email is hard because there's no tone, right? Yeah. So you do have to really filter that. But there was a lot of things that she said that were just so crushing. And so what I learned from that was a couple things. One is that you do have to develop a little bit of thick skin, right? And you have to go back and say, what are the questions? You have to ask questions. That's probably the biggest thing that I've learned is that sometimes when you look at a situation, you can immediately think like, oh my gosh, it looks terrible. Step back and ask some clarifying questions because that will help you get to the root of what's really going on. And for her, it was the caretaking piece. She didn't feel cared for. Number two is always admit that you're wrong when you're wrong, like that, and apologize. Apologize when it's necessary and then go above and beyond. So I sent her like $100 gift card to Nordstrom and I said, I am so sorry for this and we really want to make it right. She's still a client, which is also fantastic. And then to take that angst and turn it into something that can encourage somebody else. So I made a decision early on too that if I felt like somebody had attacked me or unjustly, which in this case it was, like she had the right to say what she said. But if even however I feel, if I feel discouraged, to turn around and take that and be encouraging to other people and send them a quick Facebook message to say, I really love what you're doing. And being authentic. And so for me, it is what are the people that come to mind during those moments where I feel at my lowest and how can I take that and encourage specifically other women in business. And I think as women, we don't so often take this time to step back and say, you are doing a great job. We think it in our head, right? Or we think this person looks amazing, but we don't ever say it.
Right.
And so those times of that, like just ultimate failure or discouragement, the only way to kind of rally me out of that has been to go to other women and say, I just am so thankful for you. And I think you're a great addition to this online business community, blah, 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 whatever it is. And those are really the things I've learned from failure. Like, what are the things that I can do different and take ownership for, apologize and make it right, and then encourage other people.
So good. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah. I would love to transition a little, actually, wait, before we do that, I noticed that some of your favorite software tools, you said Yesware. I've never heard of it. Tell us more.
Oh my word. This thing has saved me.
I need to Google this after we get
off. Okay. So I actually started using this when my first business coach, he suggested this to me because he realized I was spending so much time writing the same email over and over again. And so he suggested Yesware, which is a Chrome extension. You do pay for it. I can't remember how much it is, like $49 a year or something. Mm-hmm. But basically what it does is it creates templates for you and categories. So for me, people are asking about all different types of services. So like, here's a template for a consult. I write the same thing over and over again. And you can insert the name. So like you can write it and say, hi, and then the text field is name. So wherever you put name, it'll insert name in the email. And it says it has all my links, it has everything in it. If there's one for like my podcast guests, I can say, here's blah, 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 what you do. And it takes me 3 seconds. It cut down my time on sending emails back to people by like hundreds of minutes.
Like, so
it's amazing.
I'm sure I'll get it. I'm just going to ask a few questions, but I'm sure I'll probably answer it once I Google it or once I look at it. And then, so does it integrate then with Gmail?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. I put it right in my Gmail. It's all, and actually my assistant, when she took over managing my email, we got Yesware for her as well. So it's under her, you know, at simplepinmedia.com email, and then it's under my email. So if she needs any of the templates, it can work on all of our accounts too, even our hello at simplepinmedia.com. If people ask for prices, it's right in there. They just, you know, click template, contact, there you go. And that's a long email. Like it's not, it would take me, if I had to write it over and over, it would take me at least 15 minutes every single time. And it takes us 3 seconds to send it.
I love tools like this.
And you can have it integrated into your calendar. You can have it integrated into, you can track emails. So you can see if someone's opened it. You can see the open rate of those specific emails if you need. I never track that, but if you need a read receipt, basically it does it. It's so good.
Wow.
Like if there's one tool in my business that I would die without, it would be that one.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm like, that's going to be the first thing I do after we end our interview conversation. And then I know you said Google Drive and Formidable Online Forms. How is Formidable, is it like Typeform or is it completely different?
It's completely different. And I tried Typeform after I had used Formidable for a while, and I think I just couldn't do it. So I have a WordPress site.
Okay.
And so it's really easy to create all the different forms that I want. And then you just put the HTML code into that page where you want the form to be. Mm. And I've just found that I can mess with it. I can change it. I can do all this stuff. I mean, I would say it doesn't look as pretty as Typeform, but I just could not figure out Typeform, probably because I had learned Formidable first.
Yeah.
But so WordPress, I don't know if it works on any other platform.
Okay. I love it. Awesome. Well, thank you. Okay. So now I do want to transition into the Pinterest aspect of it. If you could talk to us about sort of the baseline, I think a lot of us know what Pinterest is, right? But how can people use it in their business and like, how does it work? So if someone's kind of on the fence, they don't really see the value in Pinterest, like what would you say to them?
I would say right away that you need to view Pinterest differently than social media. Pinterest is not a social media platform. It's a search and discovery platform, very much like Google. So it's not driven by engagement or likes or any of that. It's purely driven by the user goes onto Pinterest to search, discover, find, dream, buy. And it's this great place. The joke is for introverts, right? Because there's not a lot of conversation like you would have on Facebook or Instagram. There's very much this way to curate your own profile and your own boards and your own likes. So as a business owner, what you're doing is you're inserting your content, so whether blog posts or products, onto Pinterest so that the person who is searching over there can be matched up with your content and discover it and then come to your website. So it's heavily traffic driven and it's heavily search driven. So while we don't want to compare it apples to apples like Google, you just have to have the mindset of a searcher. So you can't take what you know about Instagram or Facebook and apply it to Pinterest. It just won't work. And a lot of people find that when they have been operating on Instagram or Facebook, it's a very tough transition if they don't have that mindset that it is search and discovery.
Okay. So then thank you for sharing that. So with let's say someone's like, okay, I see the value. I'm going to get myself set up. What are the first three things that they need to do to set the foundation?
Okay. So right away, you're definitely going to have to get a profile or a page. And that's, you know, if you don't have that yet, or even if you have a personal Pinterest profile that you've had for a while, you can convert it to a business account. And that's just very simple by going to business.pinterest.com. You want to obviously get the name of your business and you want to start setting up your profile to reflect your brand. Now, it's really important that you really, really stay specifically to your brand. So if you don't talk about food, don't have a recipe board. If you don't talk about DIY and crafts, don't talk about that. A lot of people think, well, Pinterest is for crafts and recipes and weddings, but don't go there. Go where you really target in. So with that, you're going to get your profile. You're going to name it your name of your business and have your great profile picture and your description describing what it is you do. And then you want to go into creating about 5 to 10 boards. It doesn't have to be a lot right away because you'll build boards as you go along. But these boards are really the silos of your content. So think a lot about, if I'm talking about Pinterest marketing, it might be Pinterest marketing for bloggers, Pinterest marketing for shop owners, SEO for Pinterest. And you want to think about these things that you're going to be creating content for, or you're going to have products. So If you're a jewelry maker, then you want to have a board devoted to women's rings or men's rings, very, very specifically based on what we think people would be searching. That's what you want to name that board. Very narrow is better than broad. So you wouldn't want a board that's just jewelry. You would want to be very specific because somebody going onto Pinterest is going to look for women's rings. And if you only specialize in gold rings, you could say women's gold rings. And then that allows Pinterest to see, oh, this profile has this board with this type of content. Now I can show it to Susie who's searching for women's gold rings. So those are the reasons why we get very specific in the names of your boards. And just know too, if you're early and you're starting out, you can change the names later and it won't change anything with the URL structure. It'll redirect just fine. So the biggest hurdle is just get your profile, get a few boards set up, and then you want to transition to looking at your content. And what I mean by content is if you just sell products too, or if you write blog posts, the biggest thing and the most important is your image, because Pinterest is heavily image based. People operate, you know, on a 5-inch screen, 6-inch screen. Your image needs to be a 2-to-3 ratio. So it's a vertical image, which is again, different than every other social media platform out there. So if you create an image, 600 by 900 is that 2-to-3 ratio. It's vertical, very clear. You want, if you sell products, take pictures that are maybe lifestyle photos, you know, with that ring, having it on someone's hand or on a dresser, a flat lay, so that the person can see what it is. And you can even add text to it. So if you want to say women's gold petite ring or something like that, you can put that text on there. Should be closely branded to your overall branding, but the text allows the user to see very quickly what it is might be on the other side of that image. So if you have small images or non-optimized images for Pinterest, which is square or rectangle, they're much more likely to pass by that or even not be distributed by Pinterest because they're not the ideal size that they're looking for.
Oh, that's a good thing to keep in mind. I know, just to circle back with what you said before about the usage of Pinterest. I have a friend who, she's a female entrepreneur, and she loves using Pinterest. As she'll go on and she'll find articles, and so she'll pin articles to her board of sort of kind of like filing for later, and yes, so that she can come back and actually read the article too. So it's just another perspective of how people use Pinterest. So whether you are doing something from a product base, like physical product base, or you have an online business, like there's different ways that people view it. I love it. So then is it wrong to assume that pinning for the sake of pinning, let's say you got your visuals in place and you pin like your article for blogging and you pin it to your board, like, is that good enough? Or is there another layer of strategy behind Pinterest?
There's definitely another layer of strategy. Pinterest has said number one, they want your fresh content. They recognize as a company that their users thrive on the content business owners create. They need it. It's kind of like this great ecosystem, right? Where Facebook doesn't really need your content and neither does Instagram. I mean, you could take a picture, but they don't necessarily need the content that's housed on your website. Pinterest needs that because if somebody clicks on an image and it goes nowhere, they become frustrated because they actually wanted to go to a website to get that content. That's how
that happened to me. Yes, I said it's really so cute. Annoying. Like, so I will create, I'll create boards about a capsule wardrobe. And I saw something that I really liked and I went to pin it and I'm like, what? No, it's going to a dead link. Like, this is really sad.
Yeah. And here's a tangent too, but I use Pinterest actually during the holidays. Like, I have both my nieces I have to give them gifts. So I went to their Pinterest board to see what they're pinning because you can get an ideas of what people want you to buy them, right? Because they're pinning it and they love it. Well, almost all of the clothing she had pinned going nowhere. And there is a visual search tool on Pinterest. It's in the bottom right. You can click on it and it will hover over the image and try to match up images on Pinterest to try to see if one of them actually does lead to a link. The frustrating part is, like, if something goes viral and everybody's pinning it, then
it might not even be for sale.
Well, and then it's like, it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So that is also another reason why your images do have, they always have to link. If you upload an image, make sure it's linked. But number two, the search tool with your images can hover over your images and match up your other pins. So this is why pinning just once isn't what we want. We want to pin multiple times, not spammy, not back to back, but let's say you're going to pin 5 pins per day. Consistency is what Pinterest is looking for as well. And at least a minimum of 5 pins per day. So if you're pinning one of your pins that's gone to the women's, you know, ring board, and then you have a women's jewelry board, you can pin that same pin to both of those boards within the same week. And then next week, maybe you've pinned some other things to those boards and it's kind of filled it up. You can pin it again to the same board. The only thing you want to be cautious of is making sure that there's other pins going on there so that it's not the same pin back to back to back to back. And a lot of people then come back to me and they're like, well, what if a user sees that I pinned my pin twice? The way Pinterest works, very few users actually come to your boards. They mostly operate in their smart feed, their main home feed. So the chances of a user coming to your board and seeing that you've pinned something twice and then saying like, I'm out of here, is so rare. Like it's users just don't think like that. And the way Pinterest works, it's very hard actually to end up on a full board. It's just not the way it works. I mean, they can definitely go there if you highlight it in an email or share the link to that board on Facebook. But that being said, the strategy behind it is to share these things again and often because you never know when it's going to be seen by somebody in the smart feed because it's not chronological anymore. It's definitely based on the person's interests and their searches, who they follow, and then promoted pins, which is the paid form of advertising on Pinterest. So with that, strategy wise, if you're just starting out, 5 pins a day, if you don't have a lot of your own stuff to pin, go ahead and pin other people's stuff that is maybe not a competitor, but a supporter of what you do, or maybe it's somebody that you know. I will often pin Pinterest articles from people that I know and support because they teach great things. So I'm not afraid I'm going to lose a reader, but I'm curating this board that can be an overall good resource for my followers to say, okay, this person is talking about Pinterest. They're talking about all these things that have to do with Pinterest. And I can, with confidence, send somebody to my board to say, hey, I have this great resource for you. Here's some articles. Or I have this great board of all my rings. Go ahead and check out and pick your favorite. You know, that's what how you want to see your Pinterest boards and profile.
So just to make sure I fully understand and people tuning in too. So like, for example, my podcast, we have an episode that comes out every Monday and we create a Pinterest graphic for it. First of all, we definitely need to do like get in the habit of doing 5 pins a day, but Jill, let's just say that one specific podcast episode, you're saying, okay, if I do it and pin it on Monday, week one, I can go back 2 weeks later and need to repin it. So it kind of goes to the top of the potential like news feed, if you will.
Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily go to the top anymore. Pinterest will distribute it out based on who your followers are, if somebody's interested in it. So the best way to explain it is I do the same thing. So I have a podcast episode on Wednesday. So I'll pin it to Pinterest Marketing Tips board on Wednesday. And then on Friday, it'll go to my Simple Pin podcast board. Mm-hmm. And then on Sunday, it'll go to my Simple Pin board. And I do all this through Tailwind. Mm-hmm. So I'm not on daily. I'm definitely using a scheduling tool so that I can schedule everything out on that Wednesday to go out to all the boards that matches over the next couple of weeks. So with that, then the opportunity you're creating is that when somebody has searched it or Pinterest thinks they might like it, they're going to serve it up to them. So here's another good example. All these examples are coming to my head at
time. Love it.
So Pinterest, I shared this example actually. I was there in June for their creators conference, and it was such a good way to think about how their smart feed works. So if you have a women's fashion board and Susie comes along, you know, in her smart feed, your pin happens to show up. It's about boots. Then she saves it to her board. That sends a signal to Pinterest that Susie's interested in women's fashion and she's pinned a pin from this particular board. So then the algorithm goes, oh, we're going to show Susie more pins from this women's fashion board to see if she'll pin it again. So you might have pinned something on that women's fashion board 6 months ago. But because Pinterest now the algorithm sees that she's interested, they're going to serve up content to her regardless of the time, because their whole goal is that Susie's smart feed is so perfectly curated for her based on her interests that almost everything she sees, she wants to repin or click. And it's like when you do a search on Google, you want things that are going to show up that match your location or match, you know, the type of thing that you're interested in, not as drilled down. I mean, Pinterest is obviously a little bit more specific, but everything over there is based on keywords and interests. Mm. And so timing doesn't really matter as much as what's your board name and then what's in your pin description. Those keywords in your pin description, which the ideal pin description should be 1 to 2 sentences that are completely written out. They have the keywords peppered throughout. They're very natural. And then you can follow it by 1 to 2 hashtags. Those are fairly new to Pinterest. So the most important part is those 1 to 2 sentences, because that's what the algorithm reads. Oh, Susie likes this has women's fashion in it, has boots, it has fall fashion. Okay, we're going to serve her up more of this because she's indicated that she's interested by saving, clicking, or just getting a close-up of this particular pin.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. I definitely have a to-do list of all the things that to improve and some systems to install. So I really appreciate that sharing of all the good things with Pinterest. Thank you. So. Yeah. As we wind down, I always go into a rapid fire round. So they're meant to be quick and fast.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. If your life had a movie title and it can be made up, what would it be?
Oh my gosh. These are so hard for me. maybe The Mountain of Failure. I don't know.
Ooh. All right. All right. What is your favorite book?
Oh, I just read the Kate Morton book. I wish I could remember what it is. I'm horrible at these.
That's okay.
There we go. It's Kate Morton book.
Kate Morton book. Yeah. We'll find it and link it on the show notes.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't worry about that. What is your best $100 or less purchase?
Oh man. My backpack, my travel backpack. It was on Amazon. It was $35. It's a diaper bag. No joke, but what? It holds
amazing.
It's probably been, and I get compliments on it all the time, but just recently it's probably been one of the best
purchases. That is awesome. What is, if you could wave a magic wand, what would be the next thing you'd outsource in your business?
Probably all of my email.
Yes. What is one thing that you get your inspiration from?
I would say for me, it's going to be like my quiet times in the morning and some apps. Like there's, so we are Christian faith. And so the She Reads Truth app is probably one of the inspiring things of the morning.
Mm-hmm. And then what is something you believe that others think is insane? Or maybe what is something that people are like, Kate, what are you doing?
Yes. I would say it's always that I feel like the Pollyanna in the room and I'm around.
What is that?
Like I'm more like the, it'll be great. Like it's going to be so awesome. I'm encouraging. And I'm around these like pessimists or realists all the time.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And they're like, your head's in the clouds.
You're come on.
Yes, it is.
Like be real. I'm like, no, it's going to be fine. It's going to be great.
Be real. How about you change the way you look at things?
You're right. Exactly. Right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That is amazing. Last question I have is, where can my listeners learn more about Simple Pin Media and connect with you?
at simplepinmedia.com. There is podcast there and newsletter. And then I'm at simplepinmedia on all social channels.
Amazing. Kate, thank you so much for your time and coming on the show. I really appreciate it. And I took away so much. So I know that my listeners are going to take away a ton of stuff too.
So fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's podcast episode. For more information, check out shedidherway.com. And if you enjoyed today's episode, I would love for you to leave me a review on iTunes and let me know what you think. Until next time, keep doing it your way.